This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest with me, T. Shao Ik, Shamila Ganesan, and Tina Camellia. Sorry, Tina.
You can also call me Miss Marvel, it's fine.
Yeah, no, you will be Captain, all right? Yeah, so before the break, we were discussing Captain Marvel and the evolution of that character into the feminist icon that it is today.
So to lead us into our second story, we're asking you on Twitter, when do you feel, or at what age do you feel 65? So far, 35% of you said at 36 la, or
at 65.
at 36, at 60, sorry.
How old do you feel, Tina?
35% of you said at 65.
Okay.
But almost half of you, or 46% of you, said that before even hitting 65, you're already feeling like you're 65. Mm. 19% of you said you feel 65 after hitting 65. Adrian Tai also commented, he said, never, forever 21 here. Oh, good for you, Adrian. I don't think I can relate. We can join the conversation. Tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or you can call us 7733-2900.
We're asking you this because we are discussing a new study on aging, not just age in terms of chronological years, but in health status. So we've all read or heard about how Malaysia will be an aging nation by the year 2035. So that means at least 7% of our population will be aged 65 and above. But you know, there's the adage that goes, age is just a number. In Japan, a country famed for its centenarians, the average person can live 75 or his or her years free of age-related diseases and disabilities.
Mm. But not all countries do so well. A new study just published in the Lancet Public Health has found that there is a 30-year gap between countries in terms of the age at which their citizens experience the health problems of a 65-year-old. So, for example, as you mentioned just now, Sharik, the Japanese only experience the health problems of an average 65-year-old at the age of 76. Mm-hmm. But in Papua New Guinea, 46-year-olds are already experiencing the health problems that a 65-year-old would.
Mm. The researchers who are from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington wrote, whether increased longevity is an opportunity or a threat to the stability of societies largely depends not only on whether populations are living longer, but whether they are experiencing the negative health effects of aging, such as a progressive loss of physical, mental and cognitive integrity, leading to impaired functions and increased vulnerability to morbidity and mortality. Mm. So their aim with the study was to develop a population aging metric that reflects both longevity and health status. It also incorporates a comprehensive range of diseases and allows for comparisons across countries and time. So they argue that such a metric is required to understand the progression of aging and to inform policies.
Yeah, the study used data from the World Health Organization's Global Burden of Diseases, Injuries and Risk Factors Study 2017. So that's data taken from individual countries. They estimated age-standardized, age-related health burden across 195 countries between the year 1990 and 2017. So that was a whole lot of technical stuff.
Does it all mean,
yes,
shall we?
I know, I'm sorry. But I'm helping you guys here. You know, I spoke to Chai Sen Ting from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging in the University of Putra, Malaysia earlier today. He focuses his research on social gerontology. So I asked him, you know, what does this study mean and what Malaysia should take away from it? So when you look at aging in qualitative terms, what is the difference between life expectancy and health status?
Well, in demography, when we talk about life expectancy, we are really talking about the survival rate. So when we talk about life expectancy, we are really talking about, on average, generally, how long the population lives, a person or individual lives. That's on average basis. But we do not know whether the last 15 years or the last 20 years of life is lived in relatively poor health or good health. So that is the linkage between disability-adjusted life years, or we call it HALE, healthy-adjusted life expectancy, health-adjusted life expectancy. So when we talk about life expectancy and health status, we are really saying that, okay, so we are trying to see beyond survival rates, we are trying to see beyond mortality rates, and we are trying to assess whether when the years of remaining years of life is actually spent in relative poor health or relative frailty or relative a disability. So this is what the research is trying to link up with.
So if we look at this study, how did they give a better understanding of this sort of health-adjusted life years? What did the study look at and what were its findings?
The novelty of the research that was published in Lancet was that this is the first time that somebody tries to use age-specific cause of death and trying to link it to life expectancy. So the easy way to go about understanding this research in crude terms is that there's always a cause of death. Mm-hmm. And these statistics are being collected in many countries, in fact, almost all the countries in the study. So there is a proper death registry. So with this information, what does the researchers do is that they access all the records in the WHO Global Burden of Disease database. And what they looked at is that they said, hey, instead of trying to set arbitrary cutoff points for remaining life expectancies, you know, or we talk about health-adjusted life expectancy, why don't we do analysis? Because theoretically, it's possible. Because if you know all the age-specific cause of death, you will be able to look at the data in a way that, okay, I want to look at 60 years and above, a population 60 years and above, or 60 to 75 years. I want to know within this age bandwidth of 5 years or 10 years, what are the main causes of death, specifics to disease specific. So from there, they can proportionately divide. So they will say that, okay, the cause of death for this age group is 30% is age-related. Another maybe 70% is not. And among those age-related diseases, how many of them are cardiovascular, how many of them are non-communicable? That's exactly what the researchers did. They took commonly reported data and they try and extrapolate it into age-specific cause of death, and they rework back those years, mm-hmm. starting from, let's say, the onset of diseases. They try to link it to that and give us a new value where the new value actually represents supposedly the threshold for healthy life expectancy. So if our country's life expectancy at birth is 75, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. and from their research, they calculated that Malaysia's health-adjusted life expectancy, age-related diseases is about 60+, then basically what they are saying is that, well, after the age of 62 or 63, most of the population in Malaysia will start to develop age-related diseases mm-hmm. that lead to death, that severely curtails their remaining years of life.
So for Malaysia, on average, we are looking at maybe about 12 or 13 years lived in sort of disability.
Yes.
And they sort of were able to list out 92 age-related diseases. What are the broad categories of these? And is that in line with what we already know about the diseases commonly associated with the older age?
The researchers took a statistical approach to categorizing what is an age-related disease. The way they did it was that if the prevalence or incidence of the disease quadruples by age, mm-hmm. They would actually classify them as age-related diseases. So in the paper, they did point out that out of 200 and over diseases that causes mortality, they identify about 91 or 93 age-related disease based on this definition. And of course, within the 90-plus diseases, they subcategorized and they reported that maybe about 6 or 7 were communicable diseases, and then some were injuries, and the bulk was, of course, non-communicable diseases. So in that sense, it is very common and conventional in the number of diseases, the kind of diseases mm-hmm. that they have identified. But as we know, there are two caveats to this approach. I mean, of course, they use a statistical approach. So they say that as you grow older, if the increase of these diseases quadruples, we can say that it is an age-related disease. Mm-hmm. But it is not a clinical definition. in the traditional sense. And you have to bear in mind, the reliability of the study actually hinges on the quality of the data, especially on disease or age-specific causes of death. And for Malaysia, at least that we are aware of from our past studies, is that we have very poor record-keeping for causes of death for the 60-plus population, simply because we used an entry as die of old age as one of the well-accepted norms in the death certificates, which we shouldn't be, because there's no such thing as dying of old age. You know, technically, in health research, that is not really very helpful for us to figure out what diseases are causing death.
Right.
So about 40% of our data that we report to WHO for 60 plus and above causes of death is actually a diagnosable disease. The remaining of it is undiagnosed, meaning that it cannot be determined or fall into a specific category of illness that causes the death. Because of maybe they put words like die because of old age or other generic terms, unspecified cause of death.
Right.
So these are the constraints. But I think the researchers have done something really interesting within the limitations of the data. The figures won't deviate from Delhi or Hale health-adjusted life expectancy figures. But it does put in an element here that they recognize that mortality is caused by specific illnesses. And by working backwards, the kind of prevalence and incidence of these diseases and their years of onset, we can roughly figure out when does the healthy aging end and we start to look at aging with disability will begin. So these are the markers that they have identified for us.
So why is there such a wide variation in that threshold, let's say comparing between the so-called most successful being Japan and the least successful country being Papua New Guinea?
I think the burden, the profile of the diseases plays an important role, because most of it is non-communicable diseases. And you can see a lot of the lifestyle diseases are there, you know, like cardiovascular, diabetes. These are all among the list. But I suppose it is still the same why some countries have longer life expectancies and why some countries have shorter is precisely due to a mixture of public health services, diet, you know, lifestyle factors. So in countries that are less developed, such as Papua New Guinea or developing countries, they might have a combination of factors, whether it is a sedentary lifestyle or whether it is a poor access to public health services or geriatric care. These are some of the issues that could have explained the variations. But of course, I noted in the research that they also control the variable for some socioeconomic variables. So that would be the part that is more interesting for social scientists to examine and see how the development, economic development and progress has an impact on average life expectancy, because it doesn't work directly. I mean, it would be arguable to say that richer nations would have better life expectancy, but in the case of the United States, that is precisely the opposite. In fact, the United States is the only country that is recording a falling life expectancy compared to the other OECD countries that are developed nations. So I suppose this is a combination of factors, you know, the number of migrants, immigration rates. So there are a number of factors that play, but in general, it will reflect back on a country's public healthcare system or healthcare system. And definitely, it is also related to lifestyle diseases, non-communicable diseases. Because in countries like Papua New Guinea or countries in African countries, they still have a lot of issues with communicable diseases. So definitely the life expectancy patterns will be different. Just worth pointing out that when we say that a country has increasing life expectancy at birth, it does not necessarily signal longevity. Mm. It just means that more and more people are living longer.
Mm.
That is a different kind of survival graph that we are looking at. But when you look at life expectancy at 60, then probably you are talking about longevity factors. So these things have to be differentiated. So we have made a lot of gains in our life expectancy,
mm-hmm.
but longevity is not the main picture. The main picture is that we have more and more people surviving into older ages, into their 60s and 70s. So it does not necessarily mean that Malaysians are living to 100. There are more of them probably,
mm-hmm.
but the real reason why we have an increase in average life expectancy is because of more survival into older ages.
Mm. In a way, then, this study is confirming what we know about, for example, the impact of non-communicable diseases and the differences between life expectancy and living well into old age. So what would be the significance then of this study to our approach in Malaysia towards aging policies?
It definitely strikes up an interesting debate because all evidence points to more and more Malaysians living longer. That's not going to be debatable.
Mm-hmm.
So the question here in terms of policy making is that what do we do with the added years to life?
Mm-hmm.
You will have a significant larger, older population. I mean, by any measure, that is going to happen. We can move the definition of what is an older person to 65, and it will still be increasing. So the question here that we need to ask in terms of approach to aging policies is that we need research to properly inform policymakers that for all these cohort, current and future cohort of older persons, how many percentage of them are aging with disability or aging with frailty or poor health.
Mm.
You also need data and information to say that how many percentage of this is aging in poverty or aging in income insecurity. You know, they have not enough financial ability to sustain their old age.
Mm.
So without these two information, whether it's on wealth or health,
mm-hmm.
then policymakers might be focusing on areas that are counterproductive or counterintuitive even. We might want to say that, oh, we need more welfare for the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of welfare are we talking about? Are we talking about cash transfer? How many percentage of the elderly are living below the poverty line?
Mm-hmm.
These are the questions that we need to ask and we need to look back into our available or new data and extract and tease out all these relationships. Because without all these data and information, we would be actually developing a policy that will only address the needs of 1% or 5% of the older population,
mm-hmm.
while the remaining 90% will not feel any benefit from a particular initiative because we have mistargeted the reach of these policies and programs. So the government and policymakers need to figure out that, okay, how many people will benefit from a particular program? And is that the intended protection? Is it a protective kind of a program or is it a preventive kind of program?
Mm.
So I suppose we need a mix of all these. But without proper data and credible research, we will always fall back on gross estimations or crude estimates of what is the situation like. For example, our country's focus on older persons always revolves around institutionalized care,
mm-hmm.
which is old folks' homes, residential aged care facilities. But at any one time, less than 1% of the older population are in these homes. We definitely need new laws, we definitely need protection, but how about the remaining 99% of older persons who live in the community?
Mm.
So what are we focusing on? And these are the kind of issues that we need to talk about.
That was Chai Sen Ting from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging at University Putra Malaysia, explaining the implications of this study on how we understand aging and health. I just wanted to bring out one last point. If you look at Malaysia's data from this Lancet paper, our equivalent age to global 65-year-olds is 62.5 years. So that means that Malaysians start experiencing age-related health problems 2.5 years earlier than the global average. So we would be living the remaining 12.5 years of our lives, assuming our life expectancy is 75. 12.5 years of the last, you know, stage of your life is with some form of disease or disability. And looking at our poll results, yeah. How many people are already feeling the effects of being 65?
So actually 47% of you feel that you're 65 before even hitting 65. Mm. Only 19% of you say that you feel 65 after hitting 65, and 34% of you feel like you're 65 once you actually are 65.
So just quickly going around the room, I feel way beyond my age, which is in the late 30s. Having kids ages you, I always say that.
Well, I'm in my mid-30s, and I think, you know, these things come and go, right? I think a couple of recent checkups kind of made me feel like older. You know, you hear things and then you feel like those are supposed to be old people problems, right?
Yes, but they're our peers.
But they are our peers. Or like, I shouldn't feel this at this age. Mm-hmm. So I would confess I feel older than my age too.
Now I feel compelled to also agree with you all. But to be fair, I've only just entered my 30s. So I think at this stage, I feel that I will feel 65 once I am actually 65. Oh, but that might change in a couple of years. Yes. the aging process might accelerate in the mid-30s or late-30s. So.
Or perhaps you learn from those of us before
maybe,
you.
Yeah, I stand on the shoulders of giants, right?
All giants.
Unhealthy giants. But we will leave you with these thoughts and a reminder about our Health and Living Live event, which is themed Values, Vibes, Vitality, where we'll be talking about how our environment, our culture and our relationships interact with our health. And aging healthily is going to be a big part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. It's happening on the 6th of April at Connection at Nexus, Bangsa South, and you can register at bfm.my/health event.
You can also keep the conversation going on the topics we've been discussing today. You can continue to tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or look us up on Facebook at BFM The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast at bfm.my, on our BFM app, or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m, Juliet Jacobs will be continuing the discussion on age. She'll be talking about elder abuse and neglect on Live and Learn. And we will be leaving you with the very apt song When I'm 64 by The Beatles. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.